Okay, so let's move back to Sanhedrin, Perek Ben Sora Mora. So I wanted to start the Inyanim of Rodef. We were doing Bab Machteris, but now we get into the pure cases of Rodef in terms of what are the Iker Chiyuvim. And before we get to the Mishnah 9 Gimel, which is the actual list of who constitutes a Rodef and who doesn't, the Sugya 9 Beis Amid Beis really lends itself to some of the fundamentals about what makes a person into a rodef. So if you want to take a look, it's you see by the about two thirds of the way down, there's a vav from the Masoras HaShas and then a test from the Mishpat there. So there's two lines up from there. First line, where the line is he. So start from the middle of the line. Amar Rav Huna katana rodef nitam la'atzila b'nafsha. So Rav Huna starts off with a striking case. We've mentioned it before that a katan harodef, you're allowed to kill a katan who's chasing someone after someone else is going to kill him. If you have a katan, you got a hold of a gun, and even it seems pretty obvious that the katan is going to kill the person that he's chasing after, whether the person that he's chasing is a katan or a gadol, it doesn't matter. The katan is mischayev benafsho, you're able to kill him in order to save the victim. So in order for Rav Huna to say this, the Gemara says he needs to have the following shita. Kosavar, he has to hold, rodef eino tzarech hasro. A rodef doesn't need hasro. Loshna gadol veloshna katan. It doesn't matter whether he's a gadol or a katan. Meaning, a rodef doesn't need hasro, because if you take a look in Rashi, it's the fifth wide line or so, the fourth going into the fifth wide line, at the end of the line, Nitim Atzila B'Nafsho, says, Kidi Alfina L'Kamon, we learn out from Sukkim later on, Rotseach Nitim Atzila B'Nafsho, we didn't officially mention it yet, that you're allowed to kill a Rotseach in order to stop him. V'hai, Afagav the Katan, who V'lav Bar Kibule Hasra, who, even though this guy's a Katan and he can't legitimately accept the Hasra, L'Gabi Redifa Dino K'Gadol, when it comes to Rodef, he's like a Gadol. It's interesting to note the Lashon of Rashi. I don't know. I'm just curious. If I would stop you on the street and say, why are you allowed to kill a Rodef? What would you say? Why? Well, more specifically than that. He's saving the life of the Nirduf, right? I would assume that's the standard. That's the standard answer to give, that the main function of killing the Rodef is to save the Nirdaf, right? And that's evident. Probably, you know, one of these times we'll do, there's a very famous piece in the Sefer Afike Yam. I don't know too many pieces from the Afike Yam, but this might be the most famous one. He has a number of pages discussing what's the main chiyuv of a Rodef. Is it, and he goes through the standard Hakira Reb Chaim does it a little bit also, but Afike Yam is more thorough in going through all of the different Gemaras and Nafkaminas. Is it a din, like the standard thought would be, to save the Nirdaf? Or is it a din in punishing the Rodef? Right? Are you punishing the Rodef? Or there may be a third variable, which if you're Medayik, the way Rashi says on the Mishnah, 9 Gimel and Aleph, he says, Ve'elu shematzilin osam benafshan. Rashi has a strange two-word shot there. He says, "Elisha matzilin osan min ha'avera." You save them from doing the avera. So it's actually you're kind of saving the rodef from himself. You're saving him from doing this terrible avera. The problem with that is numerous problems with it. Tosfos over there points out one problem in terms of the language. Later on, they talk about somebody who's going to a rodef achar nara murasa. Person is going to be ma'anis and nara murasa. So there, the braisa that they quote uses such a lashon: ma nara murasa niting lahatzila b'nafsho. Right. So what's the grammar there? Niting lahatzila to save whom? To save her b'nafsho, with his life. So clearly the braisa there is using the lashon: you're saving the victim with the life of the criminal. Not that you're saving the criminal from himself. It would have said then, ma naram rasan, or ma rodef achar naram rasan, nitin l'hatzilo b'nafsho. You can save him from himself by killing him. Right? So that's one, the standard interpretation is not like Rashi, although there are other Rishonim who say it as well. that you really, it's one of two possibilities. You're either saving the rodef from committing the crime, you're punishing him, I didn't say it like correctly. You're saving the nirdaf, you're saving the victim, or you're stopping the rodef by punishing him and, you know, giving him a preempted strike against whatever punishment he would be chayav later on. Now, there are a number of strong rayas, you know, generally speaking, they're in the direction of, it's a case of hatzolas on nirdaf. I think when it's all said and done, it's almost everybody has to say that the main function of stopping the rodef and killing the rodef is to save the nirdaf. I think the only question is, how seriously do we take the concept of punishment also? We'll try to go through some of the cases. For example, there's a Meiri, I think, who says that if you can, try to kill him with a sword. Saying if you're, let's say you're, one of these Navy SEALs who knows how to kill somebody 150 different ways. So you have a choice. You can kill him with a throwing star, you kill him with a gun, you can kill him with a... So use the sword if you can. Why? Because that's the most comparable to the punishment that a murderer would get. A murderer is chayev, sayef, or herig, whatever you want to call it. So he gets that punishment. So if you're going to kill the rodef, try to kill him with a sword. So that's assuming what? That it's some sort of a punishment and that he's...
Can you have the punishment before the guy actually did the act? And can he be mechuyev in a punishment?
Right. So that's clearly a major question that needs to be dealt with. Why is he being punished right away? Meaning, why don't we wait for the totsah? Don't we wait for him to actually kill the guy? Meaning, let's say he tries very hard to kill somebody and it's just not successful. He's not chayav misa for that. So you don't know beyond any shadow of a doubt this guy's going to be successful. Right, this rodef has a din gavra ketila. That's for sure true. But so would that mean? Would that support it more or less?
It would support it more because we consider that he killed this person. You don't have to kill the person.
Right. So here's the problem. Generally, I would have assumed that the svara that makes a rodef into a gavra ketila is it's a circular reason, meaning because you're allowed to kill a rodef, so if he then does something else, or if somebody else turns around and kills him, he has a din gavra ketila. Right? We said, like, for example, the bab machteres v'shiver sachavis. We never actually did the kimle b'derav mine sugya, but a bab machteres who damages property. So we said, he has a din gavra ketila, you don't charge him any money for what he did. But he's only a gavra ketila because you're allowed to kill him. In other words, it's not his actions that made him a gavra ketila. The fact that someone is allowed to walk over to him and kill him gives him a din gavra ketila. Like if he's a case like, he wants to, you know, stab someone, but he's also clearly the world's easiest person to overpower. The only person he actually has a chance of killing is the nirdaf. Everyone else, he was in a professional boxing or professional fighting, and he basically is the lowest ranked contender in the history of fighting, and the only guy that he was ever able to beat was the nirdaf. So any person on the street knows that they can just walk over to him and beat him right up, and it's a case what we call yachol hatzilo be'echad meivarv. So in that case, he doesn't really have a din gavra ketila, except lagabi the nirdaf. The nirdaf is the only guy who can't, you know, actually overpower him, so his only choice is to turn around and shoot him. Whereas every other person on the street is fully capable of disarming this guy in a manner much less than killing him. So he doesn't have a din gavra ketila lagabi the whole world. He just you have to try your best to stop him. So it's not, the din gavra ketila comes from the fact that you're allowed to kill him. So here also, this is the biggest raya, maybe if not the biggest, one of the biggest rayas, that it's clearly a din in hatzolas hanirdaf, because we say a katan harodef is mischayev benasho. Saying if you kill the katan harodef, katan is not chayev in mitzvos. So he can't be getting onshim. So it can't be that he's chayav in onshim. This is the number one raya that it's clearly a din in hatzolas hanirdaf, and perhaps not at all a din in punishment for the rodif, because the katan is not able to be makabel the hasra. So we say rodif enot tzarech hasra. Whoever heard of a guy who doesn't need hasra and is going to get an onish? Right, so we're saying that it's hard to it becomes very hard to support the idea that he's chayev as an onish to the rodef when we have all of these rayas piling up, most notably the case of katan harodef, where you're allowed to kill even someone. If he would actually kill the guy, we would not be able to be mechayev a misa in court because he's only a katan. So therefore, it's hard to say that there's any kind of onish going on, although. Yeah, Edom Zomim is a very different type of onish, because also the other flip side of Edom Zomim, besides that they don't have Asra, they didn't actually do anything wrong. They didn't do anything. Saying all they did was testify falsely, but the punishment in no way matches the crime. Yeah, Edom Zomim is a chiddush shechiddush Torah just because on any number of levels where the Edom Zomim, if they were in American court, let's say, so they would be maybe put in jail for perjury, saying they're not, I don't even think you would put them in jail for attempted murder. You wouldn't say that they're attempted murderers, but they're certainly not murderers. So let's say they testify against somebody that he killed someone, and they're about to, Zigmar did and everything, they're about to kill the guy, and then they're mazim the Edom. So these Edom, I don't know, they get perjury charges, there wouldn't be attempted murder. So they'd probably be in jail for 30 days, I don't know, maybe less, maybe more. I'm saying they wouldn't be killed, right? So you see, the punishment the Torah gives for Edom Zomim is really its own chiddush. It's not really based on the crime that they committed. Memela the Hasra is not so shaykh to the idea of Edom Zomim. There's a famous comment by the Rambam that Edom Zomim is a din lav she'in bo maisa. He says, what do you mean lav she'in bo maisa? Because it's bedibur? So that's what the Gemara seems to indicate. The Gemara on the beginning of Maseches Makkah says, how come you don't give Edom Zomim malchus for losana b'reach eid shaker? So he said, no, it's a lav she'in bo maisa. So he's saying, because the dibur doesn't constitute a maisa, so the whole commentary on that Rambam, Reb Chaim, also has an idea that you can't say that the aveira of the Edom Zomim is what gets them punished. He says it's the shame Edom Zomim, not the maisa aveira that they did. When the Rambam says a lav shame bo maisa, he doesn't mean classic example of, well, you didn't do an action in order to commit your aveira. It means that the punishment in no way fits the crime. Thing. It's not so the hasra in that case wouldn't be relevant because the hasra is in general to basically show you how serious your crime is and are you still interested in committing it, having been makabel that hasra and knowing full well what you're about to do. Edom Zomim, the crime that they're committing is not that big of a deal. It's just that the Torah gives this huge backlash to the Edom Zomim for what they did. All right, it's definitely requires further study. But over here, so we say that you can have a katan who doesn't get asra, and yet you kill him as a rodef. Again, assuming it's an eno yachal atzil bechad mevarav, something to that effect. So the Gemara is not so sold by this. The Gemara says, he holds katan, I'm sorry, So we have this very important case for the halachas of abortions, where the Gemara is picking up the Mishnah in the middle. It's a Mishnah Maseches Ohalos. Rashi fills you in the earlier part of the Mishnah. It's kedai to see Rashi right away, even before you read the case. It's the last couple of words on the line. Yatza Rosho. It says Beisha Hamakasha Leilid. Woman is having a difficult childbirth. Umisukenis, and her life is in danger. But Katani Resha, so the Resha of this Mishnah says, Hachaya poshetes yada v'chotachto umotziyaso le'evar. The midwife has to reach into the womb and kill the baby and cut it out piece by piece. The kolzman shelo yotza la'avir ha'olam lav nefeshu. Because as long as the baby hasn't come out yet and hasn't breathed in the air of this world, it's not considered a full-fledged nefesh, and you're therefore supposed to kill the baby and save the mother. Aval yatza rosho ein nogim bo lahorgo, dehavilei kiyilud. But once the baby comes out, the head comes out, it's a machlokis in the Gersels, whether it's rosho or rubo. But Rashi clearly is going with rosho, like our Gemara has. I think the main Gersa in the Mishnah is yatza rubo. But either way, it says the ein nogim bo lahorgo, dehavilei kiyilud, because it's like it's already born. The ein dochen nefesh mipnei nefesh. And you can't push off one life to save another. So let's go back into the Gemara. The Gemara just quotes the end part of that Mishnah. Yatza rosho ein nogin bo, l'fisha ein dochen nefesh mipnei nefesh. So that's the end quote of the Mishnah. So you have this horrible case. A woman is dying in childbirth. And the doctor says, if we kill the baby and take it out, the woman will live. But if we leave the baby in, the woman will probably die. So the halacha is, if the baby has not yet, the head has not yet come out, you're supposed to kill the baby and save the mother. If the head has come out, then you have to let the mother die and let the baby come out. Because so it's a suffik nafil till 30 days. Mm-hmm. Meaning and it's not all in all cases either, but basically if the baby dies within the first 30 days, then, you know, we assume the baby was never really going to make it. That's it has a din of a nafil as opposed to a din of a regular person who died. So that's why you don't do pidyon haben until 30 days, and that's hilchos avelus. We wouldn't observe avelus for a baby that dies within 30 days and things like that. But it's definitely alive. But there's always that, basically it's one of those retroactive things, that if it didn't live, then we basically call it a nafil. It's more like a very late miscarriage than we consider more of a stillborn than a living person who died. So in this case, we say that it has to, I don't know this for a fact, but I assume Rashi and this Girsa in the Mishnah is based on the Lashon of the Pasuk, of Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim vayhi Adam nefesh chaya, that when it says that Hashem breathed into Adam the spirit of life, and then Adam was called a nefesh chaya, meaning because of Adam's ability to take his first breath, that's what considered him alive, right? So and therefore until Adam takes his first breath, he's not considered alive, but after that he is. So when the baby's in the mother's stomach, it's not breathing normally, it's in all the fluid, and when it comes out, it takes its first breath at some point. I'm not sure exactly when, but that's when the baby is considered 100% alive. That's Rashi's interpretation. We'll see. Not everybody agrees to this, but Rashi's interpretation of the Mishnah is: once the head comes out, you're not allowed to do anything to the baby. You have to just let it be born, because lefisha ein dochen nefesh mipnei nefesh, because you can't push off one life to save another life. So the Gemara asks, "Va'amai rodefu?" It's a rodef, meaning the baby is clearly the reason the mother's about to die. If there's no baby, the mother's fine. Because the baby is there, pushing its way out of the mother and killing the mother, that's why the mother's dying. So the baby is a rodef. The mother is the nirdaf, and therefore you shouldn't be able to say that we're just going to, you know, wash our hands of the situation, and whatever happens, happens. You should have to kill the baby in order to save the mother. So what's the kasha on the previous comment of the Gemara? I mean, the Gemara said before a katan doesn't need asra, a rodef doesn't need asra. But what do we see? We see a case where the rodef is killing the mother for sure, and we say there's nothing we can do. So what must be the reason? It is, but it isn't. Meaning, without, in general, what's the yisod of hasra?
Right, you're giving a warning, but, you know, with their, both of them, I mean, the cotton that's running out, that he's doing an act to, you know, his intent is to kill.
Here, the baby's act is a natural act to come out of the mother. Is that his intended result is not to kill the mother?
For sure not. But I don't, I mean, like, so, but the Gemara didn't qualify as how young the katan is. Let's say, you know, case that would only be in the movies. I'm saying, let's say there's a baby and it's crawling over. You're a mad scientist and you, you know, built a bomb in your house and you on somewhere in a narrow lane or whatever. And have this big, you know, walkie-talkie looking button. And it's a red button on the walkie-talkie, and that sets off the bomb, blows up the whole neighborhood. So this little baby starts crawling over to your walkie-talkie. He's about to reach the walkie-talkie, blow up the whole neighborhood. So the halacha is, if you're a sniper and you're the only, you're not going to be able to reach the baby and pull it away from the button in time. So the baby's a rodif after the whole neighborhood. So the baby's not intended to do anything wrong. But still, you'd have to, you know, if you were a sniper, you'd have to do the unthinkable act of actually making sure the neighborhood doesn't get blown up by this baby. The baby has a din of a rodef at that case. I mean, in katan, we're looking and thinking of a katan. He's 12 and three quarters, and he's, you know, he got a hold of a gun, and he's had a tough childhood, and is a bad kid. So he's not a bad kid. Let's just say he doesn't realize what's going on. And you could give him all the hasras in the world. It's not going to mean anything to him. Right?
Right, no, but the difference is, of this, Cotton wants to do this, he wants to fire the gun, you know, his intention is for Trump or somebody else. There's a thought process going on. Here, this case, there's no thought process really going on.
Right, but I'm saying even in a case where there was no thought process, it would be the same din. You can't allow the Cotton to kill somebody else, especially if you say the whole din is Hatzolah Sanirdav. The whole din is to save the guy who's being...
What makes him... If there's no intent, or no, what makes, you know, even if it was a gadol, I mean, if it's a gadol, he's walking absentmindedly, and, you know, does that make him into a din of a rodent that he, you know, could accidentally set something off?
I don't think there's a chilek, meaning if a person is accidentally going to kill someone versus purposely going to kill somebody, he's still a rodef either way. The person could think he's doing a great thing. I mean, listen, not that this is in any way a good example, but when I was in my second year in Karen Biavne, it got its name from the papers as the Beit HaRotzchim, right, because of our esteemed alumnus, Yigal Amir. So that was when Yigal Amir assassinated Rabin, because he thought Rabin giving away all the shtachim and everything was putting many Jewish lives in danger. And that's, he had a din of a rodef, and he was trying. So whether or not he was right is relevant in the sense that there's only a din to stop the rodef if there's a hatzolas hanirdaf. If there's a whole political process going on, there's never going to be a hatzolas hanirdaf by taking out one guy, you know, to try to stop the plan going. So regardless, there was never a metzias in which he could have been correct in what he did, But nevertheless, the yisod is not. It wasn't an excuse to say, "Well, Rabin thought he was doing something really nice for the world," and even if he was dead wrong, so he still has a din of a rodef if it was actually true. And again, it wasn't true, meaning it wasn't an accurate example of a rodef and being able to kill the rodef. But the fact that he thought he was doing something good for the world didn't make him less of a rodef. See, he's still trying to kill somebody else. So Lamaisa, the concept of a rodef eino tzarach hasra seems to say that the person doesn't have to have the severity of the crime at the forefront of their mind at the time that it's done. For example, the shita of Rabbi Yehuda is chaver eino tzarach hasra. Right? If you're a Talmud Chacham, you don't need hasra because lo nitin hasra lahavten bein shogeg lemezid. Right, the whole purpose of Asra is just to differentiate between a shogeg and a mezid anyway. And this guy is a Talmud Chacham, and he obviously knows that this is Asr, and he's therefore considered a mezid, and he doesn't need any hasra. So what do you mean? The guy is about to murder somebody else, so we're cheshbening. Maybe he doesn't realize that it's Asr to kill somebody? In what society in the world that, you know, is it permissible to murder somebody else? It doesn't exist. There's no society. I'm sure in Talmudic times also there were like probably classes of people who were allowed to murder other classes of people, but there was no, there was person within the similar background to you. I don't, there weren't too many societies where you just like allowed to walk up to somebody and kill them. So what's the hava? I mean, the guy, since he's not a lamdin and he doesn't finish Nushim and Ezekiel 20 times, he doesn't know that you're not allowed to kill people? Pasha says, of course he knows you're not allowed to kill people. The yisod of Asra is just that in order to, it's really as part of a mitzvah, the Yitzilu Aida, as part of the mitzvah of trying our best not to give out Mises Beis Din, so we grasp at straws and we say, like, maybe he had some kind of a moment of, I wouldn't say temporary amnesia, but like, it wasn't at the forefront of his mind to the extent that he was amazed. You know, he was, of course he knows you're not allowed to kill somebody, but all he was thinking at the time is, I really want to kill this guy. You know, he really deserves this. You know, he wasn't thinking, there's an Isser in the Torah to kill somebody, v'afal picha, and I'm going to kill him. You know, so when you talk about a guy needing Hasra, of course he doesn't need the Hasra so that he's not called a mazid in the sense of if he didn't get the Hasra, he's like a shogig. Of course he's not a shogig. He knows it's us. Everybody knows you're not allowed to kill somebody. It's just that in order to kill somebody in Beis Din, we need to know beyond any doubt that it was at the forefront of his mind at the time that he did the act. So he has to say, of course I know you're not allowed to kill people, but what can I do? This guy, this is what's coming to him, he's going to get it. You know, so that's, we need the Kabbalah Sasra. For a Chaver, you know, it's not shaykh to talk about the fact that it might have escaped his mind. Yeah, if you have a guy, he's you know, like, I never actually read the whole book, Halachic Man. Oh, you ever read it? I don't know. So, but like, the Halachic Man is Rav Soloveitchik's, brisker walking down the street. So he looks at the, he looks around. So what does he see? He sees a store. He thinks about Hilchos Shabbos when, you know, whether he thinks about the Gemara and Bava Kama, if a storekeeper leaves something outside and it's mazik somebody, and he sees a pole and he thinks, oh, I wonder if you put a lechi over here, is it kosher for an Erev? And saying, so like, that's the halachic man. He's always thinking in lumdus and halacha, and, you know, that's the way he looks at the world. So a chaver, when he wants to kill somebody, he's chazering, you know, Rama Milchus Ratzeach. That's just not because he's sitting and learning, because that's the way he thinks. So Mamela, it's always the forefront of his mind that you're not allowed to kill somebody, and there's never a doubt that, like, while he was doing the act of Ritzicha, he knew full well that it was Usher to do it. There wasn't any question in his mind that, like, that somehow got pushed to the back recesses of his subconscious, and he was temporarily ignorant of the ramifications of his act. Right, no, but that's the point. Nobody in the world says he thinks it's mutter. Nobody, the biggest amarits in the world knows you're not allowed to kill somebody. But it's not like on his mind as he does the maisa, the halakhic ramifications of his act. As opposed to a chaver, as he's doing it, he's thinking in his mind, like, oh, I'm probably chayev, you know, herig for this, and, you know, din rodef right now. And he's thinking all the gemaras that we're learning, you know, that's what's going on in his brain as he's doing the maisa. So it's mamish at the forefront of his mind, as if he would have been mekabel asura on the spot. But all that being said, a katan is not shaykh to any of that, because a katan is not allowed, he's not able to do kabbalas asura. So we can't really, even if he claims he knows, he could be one of these genius kids who knows all of shas, but he doesn't have a din kabbalas asura that it's official, that it's at the forefront of his mind. You know, so clearly, a rodev can't need asra if a katan gets asra. So at the end of the day, we have no evidence that's admissible that says that a katan really knew what he was doing. You know, so the extreme example of this is the baby that's being born, who not only doesn't know that it's us, or doesn't know anything. He's just doing his thing.
One of the markans are going to survive. Not which one you kill.
Right.
It's different than the case with the... In other words, if you kill the mother, the baby survives. So why is the mother's life or the baby's life take precedence? We're saying that, you know, the baby has a din of a rodent.
Right.
Right. That's why you should be allowed to kill the baby. So the same argument, you can kill the mother, and then the baby could survive.
Right, but that's the case with every rodent. Any rodent who...
No, but
let's say I take out a gun, I'm about to kill somebody. So obviously, if if someone else shoots me, they're choosing this person's life over my life.
The person that the robot is trying to, you know, kill, he's not trying to kill the robot, right?
Well, the mother's not trying to kill the Rodef either.
The mother, well, in essence, the mother's pushing the baby out. I mean, it's one or the other, you know what I mean?
No, if you don't kill the baby, the mother's going to die. The baby's killing the mother's not killing the baby. The doctor's going to kill the baby to save the mother. I'm saying the baby is clearly the X factor that's introduced into the equation which creates the sakana. Without the baby, everything's fine. The mother's not being misaking the baby. If the mother doesn't kill the baby, the doctors don't kill the baby, the mother's going to die. So in other words, the baby is clearly the rodef here, although you're not wrong. I'm just saying that what the Havamina of the Gemara is. Saying the mother is clearly the victim, and the baby is clearly the aggressor. That's what it seems like from the Kasha of the Gemara. Because without the baby, the mother's fine, and the mother is not trying to do anything bad to the baby. Saying, but you have to understand, if I'm going to kill somebody, so why are you stopping me by killing me? Why don't you shoot him, and then I don't have to murder anybody? Right? It'd make my life easier. Shoot that guy. You have a gun, you're a sniper, just shoot him instead of shooting me, and we're all good. I accomplished my goal. So clearly, the problem is the saying, like, normally I would have said, because I'm chayev some kind of an onish, and he's not chayev some kind of an onish. But we just got done saying that katan arodef, the katan can't by definition be doing something wrong. He's not capable of it. He's not doing anything wrong. So how can then the next step is to say, okay, so I don't understand. The katan arodef, apparently the aggressor is chayev misa no matter what. Even if we know he's not doing anything wrong. So then the ultimate example of this is the baby. The baby's an aggressor. He's clearly not doing any averis here. He's just trying to be born. Right? He didn't write Bal Karcha Chatanola, the Mishnah says. He doesn't even want to be born. He wanted to stay up in Shemayim. And now he's being forced to come to this world. And not only that, he's being forced to come into this world in the worst of circumstances. He's actually killing his own mother. So that's the Gemara's kasha. And then the Gemara says, okay, so according to your logic, he's a rodef. He's doing anything wrong? No, but neither is the katan in the previous case. So the Gemara answers a very interesting teretz, which is perhaps what you were saying, is the Gemara says, Shaini hasam d'mishmaya karadfila. It's different because this is a rodef min hashamayim. The Gemara doesn't usually, obviously the Gemara is a religious book, but it doesn't usually use these very frum terutzim. Here's a frum terutz, that it's a rodef min hashamayim. What do you want? Hashem sent this baby. This is clearly the ratzon Hashem, you know, and there's nothing I can do to stop it. So we'll have to see. That's not really what the Gemara means, that it's a min hashamayim in the classic sense, but nevertheless, that's the Gemara's teretz. Okay. So let's try to put all this into the back of our minds for a second, because there's really two sugyas that need to be clarified here. Number one is a sugya that Rashi brings up, which is a side point, but when we deal with the side point, the main point will become much clearer, and we'll try to then plug it back in, probably not this week, but we'll try to plug it back in to the case of the ubar, case of the baby that's killing the mother. But one of the I don't think we're going to, unless you, Dafka, want to, we're not going to do anything in Hilchos abortions. I don't know if you want to talk about halachas of abortions in terms of when it's mutter, when it's usher, according to different poskim. Let me know. But this is one of the main rayas. This Rashi, he said exactly that until the baby is born, doesn't have a full din nefesh. So you can't say that it's a classic din ritzicha to kill the baby. Meaning, like say the Catholics, they'll say any abortion's murder, and therefore over, we can't talk about it even, there's nothing to talk about. So it's clearly not the case according to this Rashi. It's not a classic case of murder. The life of the mother outweighs the life of the baby. Her life is more important. That's what Rashi says exactly. He says, until the baby takes a breath, the life of the mother is more chashuv than the life of the baby. And we'll see, the Rambam doesn't learn that way, but that's how Rashi learns. And not only that, but Rashi has a very strong raya. All the Mefarshim on Rashi point out, the raya is from the case in Parshas Mishpatim, when you have the two guys get into a fight, and he accidentally punches the lady, and the baby, the lady has a miscarriage because of that. So the guy doesn't have to go to Golis, so he's not Chayiv Misa. He has to pay. He has to pay money. He doesn't have to. And it's not that he committed an act of murder b'shogeg. He committed, you know, an act of nezek. So clearly, there's strong grounds to say that Rashi is right in the sense that the baby is not a full-fledged, you know, living human until it comes out. Not in the standard interpretation. I mean, if you, Rav Moshe has tshuvas about this. Rav Moshe wants to learn that every Rishon holds that abortion is murder. He wants to say that everyone holds it's Ritzicha, and therefore he's only, you know, he only permits it in the most extreme of circumstances where the real lives at stake and whatever. But he tries to, he must have had some kind of a Masorah that abortion is Ritzicha, because he tries to push it into every sheet in the Rishon. Like, says clearly there's some Rishonim that say it's not Ritzicha. Rashi, you know, definitely being along the lines of those who say it's not real Ritzicha to kill the baby, but Rav Moshe won't hear, doesn't want to hear about it. He says, nah, you look in the other Rashis, you'll see it's true. And he says, I mean, nicely, there are plenty of Rishonim that also say it straight out, but he's very into it, and you know, they have different sheetahs along the way up. It's the Eliezer and the Sri Deish, who are extremely lenient by comparison to Rav Moshe, but there's different interpretations about extreme circumstances. Nobody says you can do it as a matter of convenience, but different extreme circumstances. Okay, so the second part of Rashi deals with the famous Maase in Tanakh about Sheva ben Bichri. So Rashi just got done saying, Ein dochen nefesh mipnei nefesh. So in the Havamina of the Gemara, we said that if you have two people, each one is rodef against the other one, technically. So we say, Ein dochen nefesh mipnei nefesh. You can't push off one life in order to save another life. So then Rashi asks, wait a minute. So it's back to the place that we stopped in Rashi. Vim tomar, maisa de sheva ben bichri, right? Where the pasuk says, hine rosho mushlach elecha. Right, I think that was, the Medrash says that was Serach bas Asher, the old woman who negotiated with Yoav. The Medrash says was Serach bas Asher. And she negotiated that we're going to send his head over the wall. And basically, Yoav and his armies put a siege around the city, and they said, you better send out Sheva ben Bichri, or we're gonna kill the entire city for harboring a fugitive. And so Yoav was in some kind of a frenzy, and he was not interested in negotiating, and an old woman came out and calmed him down and, you know, said, all right, we'll take care of business on the inside, and we'll send them out to you. So they killed Sheva ben Bichri in order to save the city. Didachu nefesh mipnei nefesh. There, they said, we're going to save our own lives in order to, you know, by killing this guy. So how are they allowed to do that if there's a rule, indoch nefesh mipnei nefesh? Hasa mishum da'afilu lo masru lo hoyanerag bi'ir kishiyit fesena yoav v'hei nerag in imo. So they said, one way or another, Sheva ben Bichri is a dead man. This is a self-contained walled city which was surrounded, and Yoav is about to invade. Right? So Yoav knows how to get the job done. He's for sure going to kill Sheva ben Bichri. The only question is, how many of us is he going to kill with him? So Sheva ben Bichri's forget about him, and we're also all going to die. Or we could just have Sheva ben Bichri die and save the rest of us. So that's Rashi's teretz. Avalim haya, who nitzol, afal pi shehein nerogin, lo hayu rashon lemosro kedei lahatzel atzmo. So the first explanation of Rashi is something very logical, which is, Sheva ben Bichri was a marked man. If we send him out, we'll all live. If we don't send him out, we'll all die, and he'll die. So he's finished, let's save ourselves. That's the first answer in Rashi, which will explain the Lashon. The Svara is very poshut. Second answer in Rashi, which is a little more difficult to understand, says, Inami mishum demorid b'malchus haba. He was considered a morid b'malchus. Lachim mefarash l'b'tosefta de trumos. It says that's the Tosefta and Truma says, the reason Sheva ben Bichri was was given over is because he was chayv misa anyway. So they were just filling out the law. He was chayv misa for rebelling against David, and therefore they just gave him out as he deserved anyhow. But if he wouldn't have been chayv misa, even though he was a marked man, and even though everybody else could have been saved, everyone in the city would have to die before they gave him up. Well, he doesn't even need a bezin, really. If the king pronounces him Morad B'Malchus, he's already finished. So,
I mean, they like to give him over, or did not? I mean, what was it? I mean, you can't hand him over to the king.
Well, it was also.
Because they're not actually killing him then.
Right, but David's meaning this. These were, I forgot which shavit it was. What shavit was it? Ephraim. Right, okay, so it was Shevet Ephraim, and they were very territorial about their own tribesmen, and they said, we're not letting this king from Shevet Yehuda take our guy. We're not interested in giving him up. So they, even if he was going to be killed, they were going to be the ones to do it. We're not giving him up. He's our guy, and he might not be the best of us, but he's not going anywhere. You know, so that was the way they thought about it. And so basically Serach Bas Asher was able to negotiate with both parties and say, listen, we'll take care of him. You'll get what you need and we'll get what we need and we'll all go home. Nobody else has to die. You know, I think it wasn't a proper Hechi. There was no Hechi Timtza for them to send him out alive. Mm-hmm. You know, it was either we're going to be the ones who punish him, you know, or we're all going to die. We're not letting you guys, New Yorkers tell us what to do. We'll take care of business on our end. You know, so Rashi has these two explanations as to why it is. Before we get into the logic behind the two explanations, it's kedai just to see the chilek as drawn up by the Yad Ramah. If you look on the next page, this is in the middle of the piece on the right hand side. So he gives the two explanations of Rashi. Let me just see where. Wait one second. Yeah, he has a different case, and I'm just trying to see where that case starts. Right. If you go down a little bit, he says v'chein noshim. It's pretty much in the middle of the page, in the column, so right in the middle of the line. V'chein noshim sha'amru lahem goyim. Like you have another case which happened from time to time, where the group of goyim said by women. So he says tnu lanu achas mikem unetame oso. We're going to defile one of the women. V'im lav hareyanu metamen es kulchem. And if not, we're going to defile all the women. So yitamu es kulon val yimsru lahem nefesh achas miyisro. Right. So he says also there, let them all be defiled and don't give up a single Jewish woman to these people. So basically what the Yad Ramah is in the middle of asking is, how dare they give up a Jewish person to be killed? He says, according to the second Teretz, I get it. Okay, it was Chayv Misa anyway. But according to the first Teretz, what's going on here? And he quotes from this Tosefta, and he says, I have sources in Tanaim where they give both examples. They give the example of being killed, and they also give the example of simply being defiled, where in both cases we say, no, we're not giving anybody up. So the Yad Ramah draws an important distinction here. The ikal etarutze, the shiny hasam, the achas stama kabo minai. They requested one stam person. They didn't request anyone in particular. So the emtol hachi yitmu kulam, the al yimsru lahem nefesh achas. Right, so he says, and because of this, they said, be mitami all of them and don't give it up. So even before we read it inside, it's kedai, just think it out. So what's the difference between when they say give us this one versus they say give us someone? What's the difference in svara between the two cases?
Here's the truth. I mean, who are you to say that this one should be killed and this one should be killed?
Well, right, but I mean, like, somebody, it had to happen to somebody, may as well be you.
I'm sorry, so that doesn't give you the right to choose somebody else, to choose somebody.
Right, because basically every single person you're going to come to has the same amount of deniability, I guess. You could say, every single person could say, well, don't pick me, pick him, pick her, pick this person. What do you have to pick me for? Right? And we say there's no way to tell. There's no way to tell who really deserves it. There's a Me'iri. It's a very, very strange comment by the Me'iri. The Me'iri says, in the case of where they say to the women, give us one woman, so he says, if there's a zona among them, you can give her up. He says, and he says, also, if there's a big avarian, in the case of the men, if there's a big avarian, give him up. So he says, and then he says, in the end, he says, maybe not, because maybe they were Maharher B'tshuva. When they saw where their lifestyle got them, they were Maharher B'tshuva. So therefore they don't have that status of being a bad person anymore. You know, you'd think that Hirhurei Tshuva is not that powerful a thing. I don't know what to do exactly with this Maisa, but there's a very famous Maisa that is popular in the yeshivas that Rav Shach said when he was a young boy in a certain Lithuanian town. He said there was a D-book, and this D-book was in a person, and then if there was a person who was a big Avarian or a big Rasha, the D-book would like run over to the person and hug them and kiss them and be so happy to see them. And then 2 seconds later, it would run away screaming. So fine, I don't remember if the Chafetz Chaim was involved. I don't know, most of these D-book stories, Chafetz Chaim was involved. So, it was the pre-Ghostbusters age. He was in charge of getting rid of all these things. So, I have to tell you, I didn't used to believe in D-books. I heard from Rav Drillman from YU. Rav Drillman was a Talmud of Rav Baruch Ber Leibowitz and Rav Chanan Wasserman. And he said he laughed when somebody mentioned the D-book story. And Rav Chanan, who was not a person who liked to joke around at all, who also at a different time said to Rav Drillman, when Rav Drillman says the Rebbe never smiles, he says, that's not true. I smiled 2 times. And he told him what the 2 times were. So Rabbi Chanan looked at him when he was laughing. He goes, what are you laughing about? So he said, what are you talking about, this D-book Maisa with you and the Chafetz Chaim? He goes, come on. So he says, you call me a liar? He says, of course not. He says, I'm telling you every single word of that story is true. There's one very famous Maisa with Rabbi Chanan in the D-book and with the Chafetz Chaim. So Rabbi Chanan himself, I heard secondhand, said that the Maisa was 100% true. So now I don't know if this story is true, but the story goes that Rav Shach said they asked when they were trying to exercise this D-book, so they asked what's going on with this thing that you do, that you run over to people and start hugging them and then you run away screaming. So he says, when I see a sinner, I'm so naturally attracted to sin, I can't help myself. It's like this magnetic feeling that I have, that I run over to them and I just cling to them. But the problem is when this person, this sinner, thinks that, well, look at me, I'm so horrible that even this disgusting D-book is hugging me, the person feels terrible about being a sinner. And when the person has Hirhurei Tshuva, I can't be around that. He says, that's so kadosh, I can't be around it. I'm mamish driven away. That repels me even more than when the Naveris attracted me. So, Hirhurei Tshuva is a big deal. Hirhurei Tshuva is not stam. Like the Gemara in Kiddushin says, if in Mekadesh and Isha, Almanas Shani Tzadik, Afilu Rasha Gomer Mekudeshes, Shema Hira B'Tshuva, Shema Asta Tshuva B'Libo, I'm not sure the Lashon exactly. But says that even if he's a Rasha Gomer at the time he said it, maybe he was being Mahara B'Tshuva at the time, and it's good enough. That's why if Reshechter recommends, if a person is ever called up to be an aide of any sort, so he should be Mahara B'Tshuva, B'Shas Maisa, in case you know, whether you know about it, whether you don't know about it, if you're Pasul Eidus for some reason, if you could be Mahar HaBetshuva, you could technically become Kashal Eidus just because of that. So, you die. So going back to this, so the Me'iri wants to claim that maybe if it was like known that you were the town Zona, you could give her up. But then he says, nah, maybe she was Mahar HaBetshuva when she saw, you know, that this is where it's getting her in life. So it's shayach that she was Mahara B'tshuva. But technically, he says, you could do it. So why? Because the whole svara, what's the whole svara in general that giving somebody else up is Yaharig Val Yaver? You have to give up your life before you give up somebody else's life. So what's the svara behind that? The Gemara has an Ayin Dalet. So there's the famous line of my chazis the dama didach sumak tfei dilma dama da hu gavra sumak tfei. Says who says that your blood is so red? Maybe his blood is more red than your blood. Says how do you know your life is worth more than his? So he says, so memela in a case where they say, give us somebody. So how do you apply that svar? Every single person in the room can say it to everybody else. You know, that's it. Who says you're so great? Maybe I'm great. Maybe we don't know who the greatest person in the room is. Not for us to decide. So therefore, you don't have the right to give anybody else up. She says, but if they say give us him, so now we know who the Rodef is. He's the Rodef. We're the Nirdef. So how can you say, the Svar al Chalik is Pashit. It's the same way. Technically, you could always say that. You could always say, when the Rodef is chasing after the Nirdef to kill him, you say, my Chazis, maybe he's right. Maybe you're about to try to get away from him, or you're going to try to fight back. You're like, maybe he's talking right. Maybe maybe he is better than me, and I deserve to be killed. I don't know. So you don't know what. But the answer is no. Once he has a shame Rodef, you can kill him. So Sheva ben Bichri, since he was singled out, he was a Rodef after everybody else, and therefore he can be sent out. Now that's only Kolzman that they were miyachid him. Because now we know who's going to solve the problem. We know who is the one who gets what he deserves. But in reality, in the case where they don't give up, when they don't say give us anyone in particular, it's hard to say why should we be allowed to give anybody up? So that's why the Yad Rama says it's pashut that in that case you can't give anybody up. You have to all be killed in order that this person should not, that no single individual is selected. And that's, I think, how he spells it out. So he says, Aval Hecha Damra Tnulan Aplonia Plonis Vim Lavarin Matamnis Kulon Ikala Meimar. Oh, no, I skipped. Sorry. So he says, why? V'al Yimsru Lam Nefesh D'may Chazes D'Yavin En Luhu Hai Nesev Luhu Idach V'dilma Hahi D'Yavin En Luhu He Niu D'Mitzala U'miyasva Da'atayu B'achrindi. Maybe she's giving up one girl, maybe she's the one who should have been saved, and you're going to give over the wrong person. Maybe you should have given over somebody else. They just asked for somebody. She's going to be defiled either way. And therefore, you could give her up. He wants to say a different svara than I just said. He says, since they said we want her, so you can't say, well, maybe we can fend them off with somebody else. They want her. So until you give her up, it's not going to get any better for anybody else. Well, milza tzricha yuna. He says, still, it's a tzarchian. The ha-hacha gabe uvar, the kisno... The kitnu lanu ploni o plonis dami, the katani shein dochen nevesh mevei nevesh. So he says, why isn't the uber the exact case of tnu lanu ploni according to this? I mean, the uber is the one who's creating the problem, and what's going on? He says, no, the ikal amemer, the shiny yachad, the after the mitzal uber. He says, what do you mean? We can save the uber here. So he says, it's not the same case. He says, you can't save Sheva ben Bichri. He's finished. You can save this uber. So it's not like a case where if your two choices were kill the baby, save the mother, or they're both going to die, so that would be exactly the case of Sheva ben Bichri. But it's not the case necessarily. Generally, we're assuming the baby is going to live and the mother's going to die. So it's not the same case. So here you have a little bit of a more complicated situation. You have, let's say, Yoav. Yoav is the Rodef. He's trying to kill Sheva ben Bichri. But Memela, he turns Sheva ben Bichri into a Rodef against everybody else. And Yoav basically says, unless you give me Sheva ben Bichri, I'm not going to be satisfied with any other person. So you have to give out Sheva ben Bichri, because there we can't say the svar of my chazis. Maybe you should give up him, maybe you should give up him. No, we know who we need to give up. He's the guy. So there's no one else that we can send that's going to do the same job. So you can't you can no longer say the svara of my chazis. You can no longer say, well, how come, how come we're not going to give up somebody else? Because it's not going to do anything. It says, you're the only one that's going to accomplish the goal, and therefore you're the one who gets given up. It's a very, I think it's a very strong svara. So, but that's essentially not the accepted one in the poskim. If you just quickly, we're short on time, we'll have to finish up next week, but the Rambam paskins like the second opinion of Rashi. Starts off, Nashim sha'amru lahem, you see that in Perkei Halachayin, you saw the Torah. Nashim sha'amru lahem goyim tnu lanu achas mikem unetame osa v'lav v'imlav netame es kulchem yitamu kulam v'al yimsur lahem nefesh achas miyisrael. V'cheinim amru lahem goyim tnu lanu achas mikem unahargenu v'imlav naro kulchem yahargu kulam v'al yimsur lahem nefesh achas miyisrael. Same thing twice. As you, if they say it, stam, forget about it. The im yichdu lahem v'amru tnu lanu ploni onehargis kulchem. But if they say, give us one guy, imayim achuyiv misa kesheva ben bichra yitnu oso lahem. So if he was chayiv misa like sheva ben bichra, you can give him up. Then he throws in parenthetically, v'ein morin lahem kein l'chadchila. We don't do this automatically. Because it's not like, oh, we have a default. All right, sheva ben bichra, send him out. So he quotes this, a Yerushalmi that goes Maimony in the Kesef Mishnah. Quote this Yerushalmi, where we'll try to do it next week. Actually, next week I'm not going to be here. I have a fast month. I don't know. Somebody else most likely will be here. This is Ve'ein Mor Lam Kein L'Chadchila. We don't pask in this way L'Chadchila. Ve'ein Ochayev Yehargu Kulam Val Yimshu Lam Nevesh Achaz Mishra. So he says clearly, like the second opinion in Rashi, that it's not totally in the svara of, well, should we give him up? Should we give him up? We don't give anybody up. So then the kasha turns back on us. So it turns back on the Rambam and says, what do you mean? We just gave a very glatt svara as to why you give up Sheva ben Bichri and you let everybody else live. He's going to die regardless. So what are you talking about? And if the reason that we don't give up one life to save another life is my chaz is, why should you say his life is worth more? We know whose life is worth the least here currently. There's one guy who's for sure dead. Everyone else can live. So you're going to tell me that their life is the same as his life? His life is much less. So whether or not you like the Meiri, that like you can make a cheshbon whose life is worth less, certainly in this case his life is less. So it's hard to say. Well, now we don't understand the other svar. So the Kesef Mishnah says a very unsatisfying answer. I'll just say it outside, because we only have a minute. But he says, the Kesef Mishnah says that it must be that when the Gemara said, how do we know Ritzicha is Yehareg Val Yavor because of my chazis, that's not the real source. He says, it must have been some type of a Kabbalah that we always knew, you're not allowed to kill somebody else to save yourself. It's just that we're trying to give a tam, we're trying to give some type of a svara to it, but even when that svara doesn't apply, you still can't give up the other person to save yourself. That must be what the Gemara, because basically this is a machlokes amoraim in the Yerushalmi, saying so how is there even a tzad to say that you don't give him up? He says, it's pashut. So he says, must be there was some masora that we knew, Ritzicha is always Yerag Val Yavor. You don't give up people's lives, period. So he says, so therefore we apply the svara when we can, but even when we can't apply the svara, we don't give up people's lives. Doesn't leave you feeling so good. Feel like, because there's really very little source to say it. So I heard, one of my students told me he had a source for it, so perhaps next time with me, we'll try to go through it a little bit, and then we'll try to explain the case of Uber as it applies to all these other cases.